In a recent NCAA cross-country championship held in Riverside, California, 123 of the 128 runners missed a turn. One competitor, Mike Del Cavo, stayed on the 10,000-meter course and began waving for fellow runners to follow him. Del Cavo was able to convince only four other runners to go with him. How about that for peer pressure? Asked what his competitors thought of his mid-race decision not to follow the crowd, Del Cavo responded, "They thought it was funny that I went the right way." That's supposed to be kind of mildly humorous. You can chuckle a little bit. Put me at ease here, okay? Chuckle a little bit, okay? This morning, we're going to be talking about running the race. And there's a right way to run the race. There's a wrong way to run the race. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about, surrounded about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience," run with endurance, "the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds." This morning we're talking about running the race. We're talking about not only just running it, but the goal of the race is to finish it. To finish the race. In verse 1, the writer says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are surrounded, compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses." Now, last Sunday night, we went through Hebrews chapter 10 and 11. And in chapter 11, it's that great chapter that we call the chapter of faith. We call it the Hall of Faith instead of the Hall of Fame. There must be 300 billion people that are talked about in there. I mean, all kinds of names, you know, and I can't believe I did it in one Sunday night, let alone covered a whole other chapter on top of it. I mean, it's all kinds of people who learned to walk by faith. People who learned to live their life by trusting God. People who learned to live their life based on what they don't see. That's what faith is. Faith is learning to trust when you don't see it. Indiana Jones, Last Crusade. Do you remember the last part where he's going in to find the old guy? You know, when he's crossing that great chasm, and there was something in the code about, you know, make a leap of faith or something like that, right? And remember how Indy's just going, "What's this about? What's this about?" And then he suddenly thinks, and he's scatters the sand out there, and you can see that there's this invisible trail kind of a thing. You with me? Did you see that? And he steps out, okay? He stepped out onto something he didn't see. That's what faith is. Trusting, but not just trusting. I mean, you know, if Arnold Schwarzenegger was my best friend and I was trusting him to protect me from, you know, Pee Wee Herman. Well, that's not really trust. That doesn't take a lot of... Okay, you with me? But learning to live a life by faith means that I trust God even when I don't see it. God, how am I going to get out of this? I have no idea how am I going to get out of this. How is my life ever going to make sense? I have not a clue how it could ever make sense. But I trust Him anyway. That's faith. Now, in Hebrews 11, it's all about all these people who learned to trust God. Some of them accomplished great things. They did great, mighty feats. They subdued kingdoms. They conquered kingdoms. They shut the mouth of lions. They were able to walk through fire. All kinds of wonderful things. But that's not all that faith is about. Faith isn't about doing wonderful things. Sometimes it's about hanging on to God even when you are tortured, when you are put to death, when you are suffering. And those two was what happened. And he's just described all of these people. Just listed all these people. Boom, 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 boom. One after the other. And he says, those people are now up in the stands. The words that he uses, he's using words that describe Olympic kinds of games. Sydney 2000, in the Colosseums filled with the crowds, and there's the people running the race down on the field. In fact, and the word, it says, run with patience the race that is set before us. The word race, we get our word agony or agonize out of it, but it means an Olympic type of a contest, whether it's a fighting or wrestling or running a race. And the picture is, see, all these people that had their shot, all the greats have gone before us. And you know what? They've all showed up for this year's Olympics. And they're all up in the stands, and they're all watching you. As we've talked through the whole book of Hebrews, it's all about writing to these Jewish people who are frankly having a rotten time. They're having a horrible time. They're being persecuted. They're being put down. They're being told to stop following Jesus. And they need to run the race that's before them. It's not quit. They need to finish the race. And so, he's been talking about all these people who've walked by faith, and then he says, they're up in the stands, and they're watching you. So run your way, run your race. He says, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience, run with endurance, the race that is set before us. Now, some of this, he's laying aside the weights and the sin which so easily besets us. The idea is to learn to run light. You know, you don't see the guys that are running the 50 meters dashes. You don't see them suiting up with a scuba gear, you know, a full wetsuit and tanks. And what if the Olympic Games are in Mexico City again? You know, it's pretty high altitude. Might need the oxygen. I could probably use an oxygen tank. You know, so you carry the oxygen. No, you don't do that when you're running a race. And you get rid of as much stuff as you can. And so he says, get rid of the stuff that's going to keep you from running the race. And he lists two things. He says, things that are weights, and then the sins that so easily beset us. You know, the sins that so easily beset us, that's the idea is those are the sins that are around you all the time. That's what the Greek word is talking about. The sins that cling to you, the things that always are reaching out for you to get into. He says, put them aside. And it's just the weights. Now, the weights aren't necessarily bad things. They might be good things. I mean, if you've got a diver's belt and you want to go scuba diving and you don't want to float up to the surface in your wetsuit, you want to wear a weight belt. Weight belt is a good thing sometimes, but not when you're running a race. And so there's going to be things in our lives. They're good things. Oh, very good thing. Nothing bad about it. Nothing evil. Nothing wicked. You know, I do this and this and this, and I'm doing it all for God. But I'm pooped. Well, sometimes you got to cut the weights out too, so you can run the race. The goal in this passage, it's not about winning the race. It's about finishing the race. I remember Pastor Mark at Calvary Anaheim used to get on me. You know, Richard, stop doing so much. You're here to run a marathon, not a sprint. I mean, yeah, I just want to go chugging out there and run as fast as I can, do as many things as I can, get involved in this, get involved in that, get involved in this and that's over there, and next thing you know, I'm just totally wiped out. and I'm only 25 yards down the road. You've got to pace yourself to run the race. Lay aside every weight, the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. To run with patience. The word that's translated in King James is patience. It's often translated endurance. The Greek word is hupomone, which means to remain under. And the picture to me, and it was always in my head, is the idea is that the pressure's on you, pressure's pushing you down, and you remain under it. You don't bail, you don't leave, you stay under it. Endurance. It means it's the characteristic of a person who has not swerved from his deliberate purpose and his loyalty to trusting God, even by the greatest trials and suffering. That's what this word means, to have patience, to run with patience, to run with endurance. There's a couple places this word is used. It's used all through Hebrews. This is the theme of Hebrews. This is the theme of Hebrews, is endure. Finish the race. And he says, look at chapter 10, verse 32. He said this, he used this word here. Exact same Greek word, verse 32. He says, but call to remembrance the former days in which, after ye were illuminated, in other words, after you came to know the Lord, ye endured a great fight of afflictions. He's reminding his readers how when you first came to know the Lord, it was real hard for you, and you endured. See, it's not like they've never endured before. He's reminding them, you've already done it some. You've already done some. You need to just not quit. Look in verse 35. He says, chapter 10, verse 35. He says, cast not away therefore your confidence, which hath great recompense of reward. In other words, there's great rewards for trusting God. He says, for ye have need of patience. That's the same word, hupomone, endurance. You have need. See, they've already had some endurance. But you need more, he says. You have need of patience that after you have done the will of God, you might receive the promise. You need to finish it. Yeah, you've run 25 yards in the race. Finish the race. Look at chapter 12, where we are. The same word that's translated in verse 1, patience. Now, what I've done is I've circled these words in these first three verses. The word appears three times. It's all the same word. Let us run with patience is verse 1. In verse 2, it says, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. We're going to see that Jesus is our example. We are to run with patience. Jesus, we run with endurance. Jesus has already done it. In verse 3, it says, for consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself. Jesus has stuck it out. He stayed under the pressure of people yelling at him and calling in names and spitting at him and pulling at his beard. He endured. This idea of endurance, it's the main theme of Hebrews, learning to have patience. Learning to endure. Learning to stay clinging to Jesus. He's already given us several keys to endurance. And we've seen these over the past couple weeks. I'm going to remind you, refresh you. Look at Hebrews chapter 3. One of the keys to endurance, we would title fellowship. One of the keys to enduring, one of the keys to keeping going is fellowship. Chapter 3, verse 12, look, he says this. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. See, the idea is this. In every one of us, in every single one of us, there's the potential to do great wickedness. You know, every once in a while you see somebody do the stupidest, most wickedest, horriblest thing. And you see that. How could they have ever done that? You want to know a secret? You want to know a secret? Every one of us could do it. Every one of us.
Well, I'm a Christian. I don't do that anymore.
Oh, yes, you do. You want to. And see, there's something in my heart that would love to do this bad stuff. And if I stay away from Christians, If I stay away from people who will encourage me to walk in the Lord enough, if I stay away from them enough, I can talk myself into anything. Absolutely anything. I can even make it sound like I'm doing this for God.
I know the Bible says not to do it, but I'm doing this for you, God, so I know, so you can forgive me.
That's wickedness. That's why we need each other. We need to stick around with each other. You need to have people that are close enough to you that can say, hey, stop it. You're in fantasy land here, bud. Wake up. That's what fellowship is about. That's why we need each other. Have people that would encourage you. Look at chapter 10, verse 23. We looked at this last week. Hebrews 10, verse 23. He said, let us hold fast the profession of our faith. That's endurance without wavering. For he is faithful that promised. And look at this, verse 24. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good deeds. Remember last week? It's inciting somebody, you know, arousing them to do good things. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. See, one of the keys to running the race and staying on track, a very important aspect, is having people who will love you, people who will hang out with you, and people who will say, can I pray with you? Hey, you know what? I don't know what the answer is to your problems, but Jesus does. And buddy, I'm going to grab your hand and let's pray. We need it. Fellowship. Another key to endurance, we saw this last Sunday night, the key is faith. We've been talking a little bit about this. That's what Hebrews 11 is all about. That's why he goes, in fact, if you see, there's a connection. Chapter 10, the end of chapter 10, he says, but we are not of them who draw back unto perdition, unto hell, but of them that believe to the saving of the soul. The word believe, I mean, that's the word faith. It's the Greek word for faith. And he's saying, we endure because we're believing. We're trusting. And then he goes into this whole thing. All chapter 11 is all about people who learn to trust God. One of the keys of enduring is faith. Learning to trust what you don't see. The third key is what we're in this morning, that we would keep looking to Jesus. And we'll look at that a little bit more down the road. But he says, let us run with patience the race that is before us. Keep going. Keep fighting. The Christian race is not a competitive event to see who comes in first, but an endurance run to see who finishes faithfully. It's like the experience of Bill Broadhurst, who entered the Pepsi Challenge 10,000-meter road race in Omaha, Nebraska. 10 years earlier, surgery from an aneurysm in his brain had left him paralyzed on his left side. Now, on a misty July morning in 1981, he stands with 1,200 slim, trim-looking men and women at the starting line. The gun cracks. The crowd surges forward. Bill throws his stiff leg forward, pivots on it with his right until his right foot hits the ground. His slow plop, plop, plop rhythm seems to mock him as the pack fades into the distance. Sweat rolls down his face. Pain pierces his ankle, but he keeps going. 6 miles, 2 hours and 29 minutes later, Bill reaches the finish line. A man approaches from a small group of bystanders. Bill recognizes him from his pictures in the paper. It's Bill Rogers, the famous marathon runner. Here, says Rogers, putting his newly won medal around Bill's neck. You've worked harder for this than I have. See, that's a good picture. That's a good picture of what running the Christian life is all about. It's not about coming in first. It's about finishing. It's about finishing. It's about crossing the line intact. run the race in front of you. In a way, for each of us, the race is the same. In a way, for each of us, the race is all about following Jesus. And that's the same for all of us. But in a way, each of us has a little different race to run. Because there's things that you're going to go through that I'm not. There are things that God has on your plate. Things that God has for you that aren't for me. It's not part of my race. You need to run the race that is set before you. God has given you abilities. He has given you talents. He's put nudges in your heart. He says, here it is, pal. Here's the race. Now run it. Run the race that He's set before you. Don't quit. Don't quit. I think one of the ways we quit is when we begin thinking about things like suicide. I think that is probably more common than some of you are aware of. You know what? God doesn't want you to quit. I want you to finish the race. You might not have any clue how it could ever turn around. I got news for you. You're not at the end of the story yet. And don't finish the story early by checking out. I think of the life of Joseph. It's the last part of the book of Genesis. He's one of the 12 sons of Jacob, one of the 12 sons of Israel. And Joseph lived a pretty rotten life. His brothers picked on him, and one day they said, let's sell him as a slave to Egypt. No, this is not a video game. This is not, you know, this is like goodbye. I mean, this is like, you know, the big bad men come into the house and they capture your little brother and they take him off. Oh, now some of you, this is pretty cool. I like this idea. He ain't coming back. Gone. Mom and Dad, no more. Well, he ends up in Egypt as a slave. He makes the best of it. And then one day, his boss's wife starts hitting on him. Starts making passes. He can't do that. And so she lies. And he ends up in prison for no good reason. How's that for rotten? I mean, that stinks. I mean, here's a guy who's trying to serve God. Well, he's in prison for a while, and then you know the story. Some guys show up that get thrown in prison, and they have dreams. He interprets their dreams, and actually does quite a favor for them. And one of the guys gets executed. The other guy gets released and sent back to Pharaoh. And he's kind of, this is it. You know, it's like getting a job. It's not, you know, your resume. It's having connections, right? You know, and I got a connection to somebody right into Pharaoh's court. Cool. And the dude forgets him for 2 years. That stinks. But you know what? Joseph didn't quit. He didn't say, I just can't take this anymore. I got to stop this. No. He kept going. You know what? The day came when he was taken out of prison and exalted to be the number two guy in Egypt overnight. That was the end of his story. And see, you may be going through the most horrible things. I understand. I know. I'm not saying they're not horrible. Oh, yeah. But don't quit. You're not through the end of the story. Finish the race. Run the race with endurance, the race that is set before you. Verse 2, he says, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. A New Living Translation says, on whom our faith depends from start to finish. Looking unto Jesus. The word that the writer uses for looking is a very interesting word, because it doesn't just mean look. It means it's two words stuck together. It means away and look, to look away from. And the idea is this, is that you look away from things you don't want to be looking at, and you stare at what you need to be looking at. A very, very different kind of looking. You following me here? You choose not to look at other things, but you look at Jesus. Looking unto Jesus. One of the key ideas of learning to live by faith is seeing the connection between faith and seeing. Between faith and looking. What are you going to be looking at? Very, very important thing. It was woven all the way through Hebrews 11. I didn't get a chance to stop and talk about it much on last Sunday night, but it's all through it. If you look at chapter 11, verse 1, I want to show you a few of the verses. Chapter 11, verse 1, the faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Faith is learning to trust in something you don't see. Faith is learning to trust in something you don't see. New Living Translation says it is the evidence of things we cannot yet see. Chapter 11, verse 3, through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. In other words, everything that you see with your eyes is actually made up of things that you don't see. Now, we understand this because we are atomic scientists, aren't we? We understand, you know, physics and atoms and molecules and molecular makeup and DNA and all that kind of stuff nowadays. We're so sophisticated. But can you see any of that stuff? No. Yeah, are they there? Yes. It makes up what you see. It's made up of things that you don't see. Interesting idea. Verse 7. By faith, Noah, being warned of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became the heir of the righteousness which is by faith. See, God tells Noah there's going to be a flood. And you know, if you've ever listened to Bill Cosby, you know that his answer is correct. He says, what's a flood? And then God tells him what a flood. You've got to build an ark. What's an ark? He's never seen any of these things before. It has never rained on planet Earth before Noah's day. They had no concept of what this was. And yet he trusted that God was telling him something important, and he responded to it, even though he didn't see it. Look at verse 26. Chapter 11, verse 26. This is talking about Moses. And it says that verse 25, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Moses had a choice in his life, whether he was to stay an Egyptian or whether he was to be faithful to his people, the Jews. And he chose to say, forget the Egypt stuff. Verse 26, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. The phrase, he had respect, it means, it's the same idea. He looked away from certain things. Moses made a choice in his life. He chose to look away from the pleasures of Egypt and to look at what God had for him. Oh, there's a bunch of other verses. It's all through. It's in verse 27. It's verse 40. Several times. There's different words. You don't even see it in the English. It's just amazing. The point is this. Endurance comes from focusing on Jesus. Endurance comes from focusing on Jesus. Endurance comes from looking at Jesus. Endurance comes from looking away from the other stuff and looking at Jesus. Look at Matthew chapter 14 with me. Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14, verse 22. And Jesus constrained his disciples. Matthew 14, verse 22. Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a boat and to go before him unto the other side while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when evening was come, he was there alone. So the idea is Jesus has sent his disciples off across the Sea of Galilee. He's going to stick around and go up on a hill and pray while the guys are out in the boat out over the water. Verse 24, but the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, it is a spirit, it's a ghost! And they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spoke unto them, saying, be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. And the Lord said, come. And Peter was come down out of the ship. He walked on the water to go to Jesus. Now, you know, we're going to see Peter have a little bit of problems here. But before you get too hard on Peter, keep in mind, gang, he got out of the boat. The other guys are playing it safe. I mean, they're just like, no, I think the seatbelt feels really good here on this. I'm supposed to be rowing here, I think. You know, I. So before you get too hard on Peter, understand, gang, he got out of the boat. He was willing to do something amazing. Verse 30, but when he saw, that's the key. That's what ties us into this verse here. He saw, two words. When he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid. And when they were come into the ship, the wind ceased. And then they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, of a truth, thou art the Son of God. Now, try to think of some stuff here with me. Who has the power to control winds and waves? This is a Sunday school question. This is an official Sunday school question. You may answer with the official Sunday school answer. Let's try this again. Who has the power to control the wind and the waves?
Jesus.
Ah, thank you. Yes, Jesus. Jesus has the power. At any moment, he could go and it stops. You see this all through when it talks about him and the storms. He says, shh, shut up. Well, he doesn't say it. It says, peace, be still. But I think the Greek, it was really shut up. You know, he says to the winds and the waves. And they stop. So you've got to understand here, at any moment, he can say, the storm is over. Do you understand? It's not out of his control. He is the one who's got his hand on the thermostat. He's the one who's got his hand on the throttle. And at any point, he can say, we're done. Okay. Now, when does the wind and storms stop? This is in your passage. You can look at your passage. Okay. When does it stop? It doesn't stop until they get into the boat. See, Jesus doesn't stop it when he grabs Peter's hand. The lesson is not about grabbing Jesus' hand. The lesson, see, even after he grabbed the hand, they still had to get back to the boat. Why didn't Jesus make it easier and say, okay, that's enough, stop. Wait, we've got to start this all over again.
Stop, wind, stop. Stop, waves, stop. Okay, let's get this guy in the boat. Let's try this again.
No. See, the whole lesson is about learning to walk with Jesus through the storm. That's the lesson. That's what life is about. That's what enduring is all about. Not about him stopping the storm, but about him taking you through the storm. Are you with me? Do you see it? You understand what I'm saying? See, that's what life is about. He can say at any time, stop. But see, that's not his goal. His goal is not to be the big make you feel better genie of the world and solve all your problems so you never have to worry anymore. No, he wants to be the one you hold on to in the storm. That's the lesson he's trying to get to us. You've got to hold on to him. He will take you through the storm, and when he's ready, he will say, stop, and it will be over. Now, when did Peter have problems? When he saw with his eyes. That's when he sank. See, the Hebrews 12, 2 says, I'm looking unto Jesus. And again, remember, the word means to look away from the other stuff. To stop looking at the storm and the waves and the wind. And look at Jesus. I've got to look to him. Look to him, chapter 12, verse 2. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Look to Jesus, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. Okay, we've got to make some connections here between verse 1 and verse 2. Okay, see, at the end of verse 12, it says, that is set before us. We have to run the race that is set before us. It's the Greek word prokemai, means to set before. Okay. In verse 2, it says, Jesus, who for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. See, Jesus had a race to run also. We have a race to run. Jesus' race involved going through a cross to get to the finish line so that one day he would be in heaven and we would be there with him, and that's joy. Jesus looked to the end of the race and he ran his race, which involved a cross. In fact, he's even sat down at the right hand of God. He's quoting here, he's really referring back to Psalm 110, which we've seen the author refer to all the way through this book. How Jesus is now seated at the right hand of God. The idea is that he's done with the race. He's finished the race. And so, see, we need to look to Jesus to understand that he finished his race, so can you. You can finish the race. He, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame. The word despising means to think little of. The shame that came on him. He thought, It's nothing. You know, they mocked him. They called him names, and he goes, it's nothing. They spit on him. It's nothing. They plucked his beard out. It's nothing. They covered his head with a bag and beat him. It's nothing. He thought little of it. He despised the shame. He ran his race. He finished his course. Jesus is our example. Jesus looked ahead to the joy of heaven. Jesus endured the cross. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 19 to 23. I'm going to read to you from the New Living Translation. It says this. For God is pleased with you when, for the sake of conscience, you patiently endure unfair treatment. Of course you get no credit for being patient if you are beaten for doing wrong. But if you suffer for doing right and are patient beneath the blows, God is pleased with you. This suffering is all part of what God has called you to do. Christ, who suffered for you, is your example. Follow in his steps. He never sinned and he never deceived anyone. He did not retaliate when he was insulted. When he suffered, he did not threaten to get even. He left his case in the hands of God, who always judges fairly. He's the one you got to look to. He's the one you got to watch. He's the one you got to follow. Verse 3, for consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against Himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. The word consider means to think about it, consider. It says, consider Him. The word that's Him, is it's not the regular word for Him. It means consider such a one. Ponder on someone of this kind. This is the kind of a person you want to think about, is Jesus. Consider Him that endured, there's that word, endured such contradiction. The word contradiction means opposition, hostility, opposition, rebellion, contradiction of sinners. See, everybody that gave Jesus a hard time was a sinner. Now, everybody that followed Jesus was also a sinner. In fact, everybody that's ever lived on planet Earth is a sinner. In fact, I don't know if I should tell you this, you might not ever come back here again, but this place is filled with sinners. You didn't know that. Oh, yeah. In fact, you, the guy preaching to you, oh, man, I know I'm not coming back now. When we talk about Jesus enduring, one of the things that He endured was people. One of the things He endured was people. It wasn't just nails in the hands and whipping on the back. It was people. He endured contradiction, sinners. Enduring people problems. I think that's some of the hardest stuff to endure personally. Problems with people. That's hardest stuff. You know, He could have just said, forget it! That's it! That's it! No more! You're not talking to me like this. Who do you think I am? I am God. He could have said, you, high priest, boom, and the guy's dead. You know, he could have said, I'm not putting up with this anymore. I don't have to stand for this. Scripture says, He answered not a word. He endured. He didn't quit. He didn't bail. He put up with it. Secret to long marriage. A couple was celebrating their golden wedding anniversary. That's 50 years. Their domestic tranquility had long been the talk of the town. A local newspaper reporter was inquiring as to the secret of their long and happy marriage. Well, it dates back to our honeymoon, explained the man. We visited the Grand Canyon and took a trip down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon by pack mule. We hadn't gone too far when my wife's mule stumbled. My wife quietly said, that's once. We proceeded a little farther when the mule stumbled. Again, once more, why my wife quietly said, that's twice. We hadn't gone a half a mile when the mule stumbled a third time. My wife promptly removed a revolver from her pocket and shot him. I started to protest over her treatment of the mule, and she looked at me and quietly said, that's once. Isn't that the way we'd all like to deal with people problems? Yeah, I'm still waiting for somebody to come out with a car with a missile launcher under the hood. You know, and then when the jerk cuts you off on the freeway, you know, it just... No problem. You know, and just up the little heads-up display, you know, and this laser-guided thing, you know, and just right up the guy's tailpipe. It's just, you know, no. Jesus could have quit in frustration at the stupid things people were saying, but He didn't do it. He endured. And that's the word. You can do it. In the early morning hours of July 4th, 1952, a powerful swimmer named Florence Chadwick attempted to become the first woman to swim from Catalina Island to the California coast. The 21-mile swim through shark-infested waters began on a foggy morning. Less than a half mile from the finish, she had to be pulled from the water. Later, she said she hadn't been defeated by fatigue, but it was the fog. If I could have seen land, I might have made it. 2 months later, she did it. Again, fog limited Chadwick's vision. But this time, she overcame despair by keeping a picture of the coast in her mind. Anyone who has faced adversity knows how Florence Chadwick felt as she struggled to swim on without being able to see the goal. Hardship has a way of obscuring our vision. The solution? Look to Jesus. Look unto Jesus. Keep your eyes on Him. Don't look at the winds and the waves. Look to Jesus. Let's pray as we prepare our hearts for communion.